activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast. Brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Ooh, Angelsoft butt wipe. $5.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, July 25th, 2013, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is episode number 75 of the Alien Invasion Podcast. From Waterloo, Iowa, I'm Dave. They like my swagger. They calling me Mick Jagger Nelson. Also here from Wausau, Wisconsin, is Brad. I've got the moves like Jagger Ludwig. And Anessa, kick them to the curb unless they look like Mick Jagger Moyens from Denton, Texas. I'm dying to know what those names mean. Where'd you get that from?
Brad actually had I've got the moves like Jagger in his head the other day, which got stuck in my head, and it actually popped back into my head today. And for some reason, whenever I think of that song, I think of the song from Kesha. The song lyric that says, kick them to the curb unless they look like Mick Jagger. And so I decided to actually look up other songs that include Mick Jagger in them. And so
wow.
These are all song lyrics from different songs about Mick Jagger.
Holy crap. You put a lot of thought, effort, and research into that.
It was pretty easy.
So,
the miracles of Google.
What was the first song that started this whole thing?
Moves Like Jagger from Maroon 5.
Like Jagger, yeah.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it.
That's because you're with a rock station,
yes.
Not a top
That's
40
true.
Station.
Yes, but when I was in Canada, I was exposed to a lot of pop music.
A lot of Canadian pop music,
well,
I'm guessing.
There is some, but a lot of it is American, too.
Hmm.
We were driving around a lot with a 13-year-old girl, so we can only imagine the type of music that we were listening to.
Nothing against the 13-year-old girl. It's just I remember being that age and liking certain music that I listen to now and go, what was I thinking? Oh, God.
Although she does listen to other things. Like, she likes rock. She's into Nirvana right now, so it's not just pop music. Although she's a huge Justin Bieber fan.
Not surprising.
That
I was going to bring up Justin Bieber in One Direction.
That guy, Justin Bieber, is huge in Canada. And my girlfriend...
Isn't he Canadian?
I was going to say, isn't he
Yeah, he is. And my girlfriend Stephanie actually met his mom on Tuesday. She did a book signing at the bookstore where she works, and Stephanie was there helping her out, handing her books.
Neat.
And then they went to the concert, Justin's concert, that night, too.
They have a
Sans
Bieber.
Monkey.
Huh? What?
Sans Monkey. Okay. It's still in Germany.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, Justin Bieber had a monkey that he was touring with. And
they
went to Germany, and then they said, nine!
Man, we really went off topic.
No, we're still talking about Mick Jagger. No, we went way off topic.
Yeah.
I don't even justify that remotely.
Okay, let's step back a little
Bieber
bit.
Bieber to Jagger. Then.
And,
from
introduce
Jagger to Bieber.
Let's introduce the show to everybody, maybe for some new listeners. This is the podcast where we do talk about aliens, where they appear, like in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. The show is divided into three sections. The news, the creature feature, that's the spotlight of a certain type of alien, and our picks for the week. We got some good picks this week, too. Some prime stuff going on. For our audio...
I don't know how prime mine is.
Let me guess. Inessa's is a short story.
Yes. Named Cooter.
It was either... Cooter? Really?
Cooter.
Wow.
Another name for vagina.
Yes. We're aware. I think both
the
Brad and I
matata.
Know what that means.
What a wonderful...
All right. Okay. Stop.
Yep.
For our audio subscribers, if you'd like to see us record the show live, which I highly recommend, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+. We'll let you know when and where that's going to be. And you can go to galacticnetcast.com/live. That is our live page. So I ask this every time. Are you guys ready to start?
No.
Are you ready to rumble?
Cleveland, are you ready to rock?
Perhaps.
In the news.
Ooh, juicy story that, who prepped the show this week?
Me.
Brad.
Brad, good job. You gave me a great story here.
I was thinking of you.
Alien space probes. Physics paper considers craft. Other beings have been built to explore our galaxy. This is very interesting. Ever wonder if aliens have been spying on us? Well, you are not alone. In a provocative new paper entitled Slingshot Dynamics for Self-Replicating Probes and the Effect on Exploration Timescales. Whew. Wow.
Well, I bet you that was light reading.
That is quite the
title. Only 8 pages.
A pair of astrophysicists consider the possibility that intelligent alien beings could have built a fleet of self-replicating space probes that use gravity to sling themselves from star to star. We're saying if aliens build self-replicating probes, they could explore the entire Milky Way in about 10 million years. Study co-author Dr. Duncan Forgan, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Edinburgh, Edinburgh's Institute for Astronomy. 10 million years is relatively a short time span, given that scientists estimate the universe is around 13.8 billion years old. Hang on. Let's bring Brad's screen up here on the main window. It's not...
I could actually talk and get it to force it to here. Come up, I guess. So, yeah. This is heavy reading.
It's really... honestly, like, I started reading the paper, but I kept getting interrupted, so I didn't get to finish. I only got, like, a couple of pages in. But for the most part, I was able to understand the vast majority of what I was reading up until they included the rate at which some of the crafts were traveling. But essentially, they explore three different scenarios of probe behavior. There's the standard probe just flying out through space. No gravity assist whatsoever, just completely powered by something, whether it's solar, fuel, nuclear, whatever. they also looked at flying to the nearest unvisited star using the slingshot techniques, and then going, like, the third thing, so they were just going from, like, point A to point B for the second one. The third one, they're actually going from, like, point A, B, and then C, using the slingshot method. And they talk about different people that have explored this idea to some degree. Like, they've referenced a lot of previous papers. But previous papers didn't take into account the possibility of maybe, like, or self-replicating or self-repairing probes.
See, that's the key,
and
right?
So the time scale would be really super huge by some of the past methods. But their idea is, you know, you've got things now like 3D printing and stuff that we're starting to explore. And so with the possibility of life being out there, being more advanced than we are, they may have already figured out a way to create these crafts that are self-replicating and can actually repair themselves and just keep on going by using the gravitational force going from one planet to another and one star to another. And that's basically what we did with Voyager and stuff, like the 1 and 2 space probes.
Yeah, we use...
get them out. We use gravity assist, but we use it on a smaller scale just with the solar system and the planets and stuff.
No, wait a second. The slingshot around stars, doesn't that cause time travel? If I'm not mistaken, from my Star Trek... My Star Trek movies.
That's only if you've got a Vulcan science officer doing the math for it.
Okay.
And Sulu at the helm. Then they make that happen. Right. No, the one thing that I thought was cool here, and this is from NASA's website talking about how a gravity-based speed assist would work, is, and you'd have to be watching the video, so sorry folks that are listening to the audio, but essentially there's a cartoon here of a child with a beanie cap with the propeller on top, and he is throwing a ball at 30 miles an hour at the front of a flat-nosed train moving at 50 miles an hour towards the child. Now, the speed of the train at 50 and the kid throwing the ball against the front of the train is 30, but the resultant speed that would happen as the ball is bounced away from the train is up to 130 miles per hour. So it's almost like you're doubling the speed that the assist that the planet gives you with and adding the 30 mile per hour throw that the child is giving. So you're for just a little bit of energy to move something forward to use that gravity assist, you're getting a heck of a lot of a speed boost out of that. So it's kind of a big deal, but you really need to have done some serious math and geometry to make that all work.
Yeah, you might just be sending yourself into a red giant or something.
My question is, what's the point of this? Like, are they going to get back results from these probes? You know?
From the probes? Well, their thing, so far what I gather, is they're dealing with the Fermi paradox. And Fermi and Hart, a couple of physicists, have like this, I guess, line of thinking, this theory or paradox. And basically, the Earth should have already been colonized at this point, or at least visited by beings from another planet somewhere off in the galaxy. But there's no evidence to support that we've actually been visited by extraterrestrial beings. And so they're basically saying is it would take approximately 10 million years for another being with this particular type of technology to explore the galaxy in its entirety. And because the galaxy is, like, what was it, 30-some-odd million, billion, or whatever, billion years old, that hasn't happened yet. And so that's where the paradox is. It's like, we should have been visited by now if there is anything else, but we haven't.
But
and so basically, they're just, they had this idea and they wanted to see if doing things on a shorter time scale would even be possible, because other people that have tried to calculate how long it would take for another civilization, I think they call them like extraterrestrial technological civilizations, to be able to actually explore the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever they did that, it took many times longer than what they're calculating. And so they're saying, like, now that we know about 3D printing and stuff, like, it's possible that other people or other beings and other planets may have access to this technology, like, a long time ago. And so they're just basically trying to calculate how long it would take to explore the galaxy if they have the proper technology, traveling at certain speeds and rates and whatnot.
Okay, I guess my mind
it's
went...
It's just for shits and giggles.
Yeah. I was going to say, because my mind went...
Because they're not actually going to, like, hop out in space, because we're not there yet to...
Yeah. Yeah.
To use any gravity assist, probes to explore the entire galaxy. Like, we're just barely getting out of our own solar system.
Yeah, what I was thinking, though, was... If there was a civilization doing this, would these probes be manned or unmanned? Because if they were unmanned, how would the originators of these probes get the results from their whatever they find out in the galaxy? You know,
Well, it's possible though. Just depending on the rate at which they send out the probes and the direction and the distance between each probe. You could have something kind of like a telephone.
Relay the message.
And
yeah.
Just relay the message back.
Good call. Very good call. Okay.
So.
Interesting.
Interesting. All right.
Because, I mean, like, we can send signals out. It just takes, like, if you look at how long it's taken to get, like, how far to, like, certain stars, like a radio signal sent back out in, like, the early 1900s or 30s or whatever, I'm sure they have something similar. But I would think that especially on such a scale of going across the galaxy that they would probably plan it to where, okay, we're going to send out these many probes and send them out in waves so that way the message gets relayed and it keeps the signal strong, maybe. And gets it back.
I guess, you know, until we develop subspace communications, that we'll have to do.
So, I don't know.
Nobody
You're
left.
More than welcome to nitpick their paper and create something new. So, because that's basically what they've done, is they've looked at other people's work, and they're like, well, you know, this person had a good idea, this person's idea was pretty good, but it took too long, or the resources didn't make sense. What if the ETC, like extraterrestrial technological society or civilization, had additional technology that we're not aware of? And what would happen if we had self-replicating, increase the speed for each passing star that they go past? And
okay,
that would reduce the time scale at which they would come across. But
interesting to think about. That's for sure.
So,
all right. Good job, Brad, putting that story in there. And good job,
Yeah, it
Odessa.
Was a toss-up between that and another story, which is going to be something I will talk about later in the show.
Intriguing. Okay, well, you've got story number two, so what do you got?
Well, in this particular story, we're going to talk about The Guardians of the Galaxy, a space-based comic book film. Go
See,
figure.
You know what? Our podcast is great because we can go from hard science to The Guardians of the Galaxy. This is what's awesome about
With
the aliens.
Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
So, Comic-Con in San Diego was this past weekend, and of course, you know, the Marvel rolled out some information about some of their films, and they even had a panel that was hosted, or moderated by Chris Hardwick of The Nerdist, and they talked a bit about the Guardians of the Galaxy. So, Yahoo Movies has a bit more insight from the Guardians of the Galaxy film about their casts and characters, and providing some sound bites from the actors since donning the extensive makeup and new muscles needed for their role. Chris Pratt alone worked out quite a bit, hardcore, and really kind of changed the look of the character that he plays on. Is it Parks and Rec?
Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's really, really kind of... he's looking slender and strong and manly. Sorry. Anyways, but one of the other things, too, is Karen Gillan, formerly Amy Pond of Doctor Who, actually shaved her head for the role that she is playing in the movie.
What is her role?
She doesn't even look like her anymore.
No, not without her red hair. It's very interesting. She's playing a... pirate character that's, I believe that she's the granddaughter or great-granddaughter of Thanos.
I'll take your word for it, because I have no idea who any of these characters are.
Yeah. Anyways, she's a kind of a badass space pirate. Blue-skinned space pirate, I might add. So what Zoe Salanda... Saldana, God, I can't say anybody's name today, who plays more notably, I think, Uhura from the Star Trek films. She says it's an anti-hero movie, and it really is. And she's playing the character who is an assassin, the last of her kind, named Gamora. And they're just a band of rebels, thieves, assassins, and they all come together and they're on the run. They actually escape from a prison together, and they end up calling themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy. But she's saying that they're very different from the Avengers, and the Guardians have much, she's saying, bigger powers that could totally kick Thor and Captain America's ass. Drax, the Destroyer, who's I can't remember who's playing him. I think he's a wrestler or MMA.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh,
Bautista, there it is.
Yeah.
Drax could definitely beat up Hulk and Thor, said Bautista. Drax is an interesting creature. He is full of rage and he's full of honor. But the best thing about Drax is he's hysterical without really meaning to be. However tough the Guardians are, the actors who play them aren't to be messed with either. There's an interview in Extra, which features the Chris Pratt going into details of how dangerous Saldana has become since turning Gamora green. In a Yahoo movie article, they also dive more into the plot, including Thanos' confirmed involvement. So we last saw him at the end of the Avengers film, but he is definitely going to be a part of this film. And I can never pronounce his name either. I remember him from, he played Papa Midnight in the Constantine film. Damon Hounsou? I can never pronounce his first name. But he signed on because his, and this is an interesting story. I did some further reading on this. His son said he wanted to be lighter skinned so that he could be a superhero. And he was completely taken aback by that. And
wow.
He wanted to sign on to this film to show him that people with different skin colors can be superheroes too. A very important lesson. And I think that's really, really commendable that he would do that to show his son, you know, to change that way of thinking. And I guess Chris Pratt's diet change has been kind of a big deal. The Guardians of the Galaxy film arrives August 1st next year.
Are we concerned that the general public doesn't know anything about the Guardians of the Galaxy? Do you think that will affect the attendance of this movie? People actually going to see it because they have, you know, I don't know any of the story.
I think so, as long as it's marketed right.
Yeah, marketing's going to be everything with this. But you've got some pretty decent names. You've got the wrestling or MMA crowd that know of Bautista. You've got Michael. Damn it, he was the guy in Slither. He's been in so many different things. He was recently in The Walking Dead.
Michael Rooker.
Oh,
yeah. He's going to be in it.
Yeah.
He's playing a character. You've got Zoe Saldana. You've got Chris Pratt. You've got a lot of different people, and you've got the people that are diehard James Gunn fans, James Gunn is the director of the film. I think you've got enough going for it that with the right push, the right marketing, and saying, you know, from the people who brought you The Avengers, here's another Marvel film that you should check out.
Yeah.
I think somebody asked me the difference between Marvel and DC with their movies. You look at Marvel is a relative newcomer in the world of comic books, yet they have the most successful comic book movies. You look at DC, which is owned by Warner Brothers and Time, they've got a huge media company at their beck and call to get the DC Comics characters out there, but their movies, you know, with the exception of the recent Batman films, and I guess Man of Steel is still the jury's out as to how successful that really was. They haven't been doing all that well. And the thing is, Marvel really started out with not having anything to lose. They decided that they were going to do an X-Men movie. They decided that they were going to do things that, you know, people said, well, you know, it's a large ensemble cast. I don't know how well that's going to do. And they blew away expectations and did something amazing, even though people said it really couldn't be done. They didn't feel that they felt that they had nothing to lose, and they went for it, and it really paid off for them.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got Marvel Studios being the juggernaut that it is, pun intended, they now have built a reputation as to having all of these really awesome characters, big success. I mean, the Avengers pulled in over $1 billion when you look at all the receipts worldwide. That's a big deal. You've got all these success stories that you can tag on to their future properties, and I think that that marketed properly will do very well for them.
Yeah, and DC is really playing catch up. Speaking of
they're
which,
they're way behind.
Speaking of which, how do you feel about the Batman Superman movie? I think that says it all right there.
I don't know. It depends on, you know, if they're going to – Warner really wants instant success, which is why I think they haven't done a Wonder Woman movie. They should have done one a couple years ago when they had Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon was up and wrote something for Wonder Woman, and they went, "No, we're not sure."
He's perfect for that.
Yeah. It just there was nobody better that could have written a strong female character like Wonder Woman, and they kind of pissed it away. And that's very sad. They really want the guaranteed big box office return, and there is no guarantee. You know, again, that goes back to Marvel felt that they had nothing to lose and went for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that paid off. And they don't have that same vibe. They don't have that same thing going for it. And I think that ultimately holds them back. So I don't have expectations for it, which may be a better thing. I don't know. Depending on who you talk to, they didn't get Superman right. The last Batman film was okay. Not the best of the three. So having both characters and you've got getting back to the wanting to have a hit, if they have that thought process, are they going to continue on with the storyline that Nolan laid out, that Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne is out of the picture? He's retired. Do you get a Bruce Wayne Batman for the Batman Superman film?
Or
do you completely reboot?
Or do you go with Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Joseph Gordon, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. We'll see, I guess.
So, I don't know. If they go with the Nolan universe type stuff, then Bruce Wayne Batman is done.
Mm-hmm.
And not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right.
So, no. Without Bruce Wayne, I don't think it would do well.
Okay. All right, that's that, right, for now?
Mm-hmm.
All right, before we do our final story, we would love your feedback. I miss your feedback, people. So give it to us, all right? 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. That is the voicemail number. Call it, please. Let us know that you're listening. Oh, yeah, that's it's a text number, too. So... what's that Mass Tech song that's really popular right now? You guys heard that?
No.
Moves Like Jagger?
No.
Just kidding.
I don't know. If you don't,
I don't know. I'm sorry.
If you don't want to call us or leave us a text, you can leave us an email, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. And we thank you for your feedback. Let us know what you think about the stories that we're talking about. The stuff, our recommendations, you know. How do you feel about the Guardians of the Galaxy? Let us know. All right.
Contact us or we'll kill this puppy. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to kill
no.
a puppy.
Puppies are nice and fluffy.
I would be sad. And
puppies
if
are
you killed
cute.
A puppy, I don't think I would be your girlfriend.
I wouldn't blame you. I'd kick my own ass.
Be like, you're an awful person.
All right, let's bring it back. Final story.
The Life on Mars. Yay!
Did I bring the show down that far? I humbly apologize.
It's okay.
No puppies will be harmed. Swear to God.
No.
Some Z-buns. Z-buns will be harmed.
No, Z-buns are our friends. We don't want to harm them.
Oh, yeah. The Gutens.
Freaking Gutens.
Gutens will be harmed.
And all their goo and stuff that they do.
Yeah.
All right. So Mars, life on Mars.
So Mars, life on Mars. There was an animated GIF, or GIF, I suppose is the proper pronunciation, that NASA released. And a lot of people are asking what it is. NASA states that it looks like a rabbit in a hat with the bat, a 6-foot Impala.
Yes!
The identity of an oddity that looks like bunny ears in a picture from Mars eluded the science and engineering teams. The public, so fascinated about this object, has been asking in a whole bunch of emails, like, what is it? Basically, that the NASA team believes that this odd-looking feature is a piece of soft material that definitely came from their vehicle, one of their lunar rovers. We cannot say exactly where it came from, but we can say that there are several possibilities. One, it's a piece of cotton insulation. It could also be Vectron covers and wraps from the airbag whenever it was landing. Xylon brittle tension ties.
Xylon?
Felt in Xylon.
Oh.
With a Z.
Okay.
Xylon, not Cylon.
Toasters! They're toasters!
It's not fracking toasters, Dave.
Damn.
Felt insulation from gas generators. And there are other things that it might be, but they do not think that it's life. They believe it's just something that fell off during the landing process of the rover.
It does look like a little bunny.
It does look like a bunny. Now, Brad actually has it up on his screen, so if people are actually watching our videos, they can take a look and see.
Yeah, and just to jump in here real briefly, these are different, I don't know, they're not different times of the day. I think they're different filters that they put on there. If you look at it, it almost looks like this quote-unquote ear is moving, but if you look at the shadow, it is holding still. So I think the movement is really just a trick of the eye. But yeah, looking at the shadow, it doesn't move at all.
Yeah, and I'm inclined to agree that it's just the different filters of the camera. But UFO sightings daily is calling shenanigans on NASA's story. And they're saying that NASA's trying to downplay the fact that this is indeed alien life because it's seen moving and then it disappears, supposedly, which I didn't really see it disappear in the image. So apparently they have access to something that we don't. They're also claiming that NASA has video of the rabbit, Mars rabbit, moving across the sand and then disappearing. But as Brad pointed out, if you look at the shadow does not move. And it just looks like different filters or maybe a glitch in the camera or something where it's just causing different shades of gray or light to pass through. It just, yeah, it doesn't look like it's actually moving. It's stationary.
The other thing to keep in mind is Curiosity? Is Curiosity.
Yeah.
I believe it's Opportunity that's still running. That the thing about Mars and the thing that they always planned in with this is it does have solar panels on each of these different units. And over time, the Martian winds blow dust on these panels, and over time it will reduce the amount of power that they will be able to draw in because they're not being able to grab as much sunlight to power the systems. That being said, if this is part of the parachute or something that is light, the Martian winds can easily blow it somewhere, thus making it disappear. And I think that that lends a lot more credit to that thought, is that it is something light, like parachute material or something else, that the Martian winds blew off.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
The only reason why Opportunity is still running is it's caught occasional Martian winds that have blown some of the dust off of the power panels, the solar panels, and has allowed it to keep running. So, I mean, there's a very active atmosphere wind on the planet. So
Right.
I think it's funny because this is not the first time that something has been seen in a photo and people thought it was something else.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was the face on Mars.
Yeah. But even on this mission, there's been a few things that people have seen that they claim was something else.
Like the penis?
There was a penis? Really?
Yeah. Curiosity drew a penis on Mars.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
In the
That's
tracks.
A great story.
The tracks. Okay.
Yeah. yeah. I don't know. People just have a very vivid imagination.
They want to see penises is really what it boils down to.
Kind of like that newswoman.
I was going to say, I saw that video.
That was hilarious. I'm like, she's not going to... Oh, she did.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Yeah. You didn't see that coming, lady?
Wah, 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 wah.
Oh, and I just realized what I just said. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
All right. Good job,
sorry.
Brad. All right, that's it for our news. Good job,
Bunnies
guys.
Bunnies on Mars.
Bunnies on Mars, Guardians of the Galaxy, and self-replicating probes. And I wanted to mention on that first story, did you guys ever see the episode of Deep Space Nine when they were using the self-replicating mines to block the entrance to the wormhole from the Dominion? Are you guys familiar with Deep Space Nine? That storyline.
I've never watched Deep Space Nine.
Yes, and didn't you just say this a little while ago?
I did.
Pre-show, I said it.
Pre-show. Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm having deja vu. Oh my God. Okay.
No, pre-show.
The glitch in the Matrix, it's okay.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, okay.
All right.
No, I don't remember the self-replicating mimes on DS9.
Yeah, not Quark. What was Quark's brother's name? Rom. Rom came up with the idea.
Oh, that frickin' guy. Yeah. He owes me $20.
All right, so let's move on from the news. We've got the creature feature coming right up. But first, a message from our sponsor, Audible.com. Do you guys do a lot of driving, or will you be doing a lot of driving?
We'll be doing a lot of driving next month.
Yeah, because Brad's going down.
Christ, we'll be doing a lot of driving next month.
Brad's going down to Texas, and you're going to take him all over the state.
Yeah,
it's going to feel like it.
Yeah, so maybe you guys need a good book to listen to.
Possibly. Yeah. Possibly.
So how about a free trial, 30 days free of Audible.com? How's that sound?
That sounds like a great idea, Dave Nelson. Please, tell me more.
Okay, well, Audible are audiobooks, and the one that we're recommending this week is based on your pick. It's
what?
Pacific Rim, the official movie novelization.
Whew.
Yeah. So here's the story. I'm sure we're going to talk about it more with your pick, but when legions of monstrous creatures known as kaiju rise from the sea, a war begins that will take millions of lives and consume humanity's resources for years on end. To combat the giant kaiju, a special type of weapon is devised. Massive robots called Jaegers, or are they Jaegers?
Jaegers.
Jaegers.
Like Jägermeister.
Okay. Which are controlled simultaneously by two pilots whose minds are locked in a neural bridge. But even the Jaegers are proving nearly defenseless in the face of the relentless kaiju. On the verge of defeat, the forces defending mankind have no choice but to turn to two unlikely heroes. So there you go. That's the that's our audio.
Martian rabbits.
Our Audible pick for the week is the novelization of Pacific Rim. You can... Nice.
Sorry, I was injecting drama in there. And,
Where'd you get that off the Hangout soundboard?
Yeah, it's the comedy and tragedy mask. It's drama. Okay. It's the Inception stinger.
Yeah, I was gonna say it sounds a lot like the Inception, or the sound they use on every single movie trailer now.
Yeah.
Every single one, you hear that.
I want to make a movie trailer and have it be like the complete opposite.
Yeah. Dong.
Bing.
Nothing but Wilhelm screams and the Inception stingers.
I need to add the Wilhelm scream to the soundboard, I think. I believe. Anywho, audible.com. Free trial. Get it today. Go to audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. And we thank Audible for their support of the Alien Invasion podcast. All right, speaking of the soundboard and the Wilhelm scream, let's do this right here.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
Of course, this is our famous alien in history, or ones that are supposedly real aliens that people have seen or been taken by. So what do you got, Brad?
Well, speaking of comic books and my diatribe against DC and Warner and their hideous attempts at making movie franchises, talking about a DC race from the 30th century, they are the Brawlians. The Brawlians are a race of humanoid aliens from the planet Brawl.
No, and really? I didn't see that coming.
Don't tease me, Brawlians.
From the planet Troy. No, they have the natural ability to manipulate magnetic fields.
Ooh.
Brawlians were revealed to have been a group of genetically engineered humanoids who were part of a eugenics program to create superpowered beings undertaken by a species called the Dominators. Yeah, it's not quite like that. They're an alien race that essentially wanted to kind of manipulate mankind to create warriors of their own. So they ended up toying with the genetics of human beings to create humans with telepathic abilities, with magnetic abilities, with fire abilities, with different genetically engineered abilities to do certain things. And what ended up happening is the Dominators were found out and defeated. And then a Daxamite hero, not listed here, but I read the comics, whose name was Valor at the time, he rescued all of them and ended up putting them on planets that suited their newfound abilities. So like the Brawlians were put on a planet where the life forms on the planet were mostly metallic in nature. So they were able to colonize the planet successfully and kind of develop – they actually developed their own form of martial arts around their magnetic abilities, which is really kind of interesting. So by the 30th century, this particular incident happened – well, at least in that particular version of the DC universe around the 1990s. So by the 30th century, so 1,000 years later, the planet Brawl was populated and was a thriving world. And they ended up being a part of or becoming a part of the United Planets, basically a government that kind of like the United Nations is to us now. The United Planets was a planetary-scale version of that. The notable Brawlians were Rock and Paul Kryn, who are brothers, and they became a part of the Legion of Superheroes. So the basic powers that the Brawlians have. Magnetic manipulation, so they can manipulate, repel, attract metal objects of varying sizes. They can actually juggle smaller metal objects, so they could just hold their hand out, and if they had like three, you know, smaller spheres, they could actually juggle them using their magnetic abilities. They can actually concentrate and pull large iron meteorites or satellites down from the sky, and they can actually use their magnetic powers on rocks that might contain iron ore as well. They can create magnetic force fields to protect themselves from physical harm, and they can actually extend that out to other people and try to protect them or actually kind of lift them off the ground. They have magnetic-based flight, so they can work with the magnetic fields of a planet and actually pull themselves up and move themselves along the magnetic fields. They have a form of electromagnetic sight, so they could actually like close their eyes and kind of concentrate and kind of feel the magnetic patterns around them, and they can basically kind of maneuver or walk around using that ability. They have a magnetic pulse skill, which they can focus their magnetic powers into like a concussive blast. They can actually do a form of energy absorption. So if somebody shot electricity at them, they could actually pull some of that energy in and actually supplement their own magnetic skills and abilities.
Wow.
They can do like a geomagnetic link. So they can tie themselves to a planet's EM field. So they kind of instinctively know what happens with the planet if there's a disruption of the magnetic field of the planet. And they can also manipulate the natural iron, which occurs in the blood of most living organisms.
Holy crap, these guys have a lot of skills.
They do have a lot of skills. And for the most part, they are a very peaceful race. Rock Kryn was known as Cosmic Boy in the Legion of Superheroes, and he's the one that had magnetic abilities. He retired at a certain point, and his younger brother, Paul, P-O-L, because they're aliens, ended up joining the team. And they have another person from Brawl, who is the Cosmic King, who is an evil Brawlian.
What year was this created?
This would have been the 60s.
Okay.
Mid-60s.
I was going to say, it sounds very 60-ish. The names do.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because you get you look at some of these names of these aliens, and at some point there is a character who comes from the planet Bismalia. Is a Bismalian, and his name is Tenzel Kem, and he is Matter Eater Lad from the planet Bismal, Pepto Bismal.
Oh my God! Gotta
yeah,
be kidding me.
And yeah, so I mean, there was a sense of humor, and they were trying to, you know, create these different alien races for this comic book, and they had some pretty interesting things that kind of, I don't know, they saw Pepto Bismal and went, you know what? We need an alien that can eat anything. Yes. The planet will be called Bismal. Yes. And he'll be Matter Eater Lad, and he can eat any kind of matter whatsoever.
Oh, my God. It's terrible.
Brilliant.
It's terrible.
And the Bismalians became the way they did is because I believe that their planet was poisoned by some microbial thing, so they ended up having to eat non-living matter to survive. So, yeah. Anyways, the Brawlians. That is my creature feature for today.
Good job, Brad. I learned a lot today.
No, you didn't. You're going to forget all about
this. No, I'm serious. These Brawlians sound really interesting. Like, they can do a lot. Like, if they came to Earth, they could be the greatest superhero ever, right?
They would screw up all of our technology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't use my smartphone because of the stupid Brawlians.
Better break out the Louisville Slugger.
I'm getting bad reception. Could you walk about 20 feet that way?
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm going to walk to take this call.
Thank you, Rock Kryn. Sorry.
I would love to write a comic book. Like, I have no art skills whatsoever. But I got some crazy ideas. Like, I'm very, like, as far as stories go, I'd love to. Let's write a comic. Can either of you draw?
Stick figures.
Okay. All right. Never mind then.
I could make 3D stuff maybe, but
yeah.
I'd like to finish our super secret idea first before I take that on.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
I've got some of the work done, but not all of it.
All right. Cool. All right. So that is the creature feature. Thank you very much, Bradley. You can listen to our show, this show right here, The Alien Invasion, and all the other shows on the Galactic Netcast Network. Where, guys?
Stitcher Smart Radio.
Yes, yes. And you can get it on your smartphone, either an iPhone, Brad's Galaxy S3, your Android tablets, your Nook. You can get it all over the place. You can get it as an extension on your Chrome browser, right?
Yes, and Firefox.
Is it an extension or an add-on?
It's an add-on for Firefox.
Okay. All right, so Stitcher.com/GalacticNetcasts. Enter the promo code GalacticNetcasts and sign up today. Use that promo code, please. We get credit for sending you in their direction, and you can listen to our shows very easily. What's your favorite feature of Stitcher, Brad?
Quite honestly, it's become more and more popular, so the ever-expanding list of podcasts that are available. I highly recommend subscribing to all of the Galactic Netcasts shows, but if you have different tastes that might not be just science fiction, you could always, actually this pulled up, I was listening to Marketplace from National Public Radio. And it's actually paused partway through a podcast from them.
Cool.
So, I'm a firm believer in this, and I truly use this at least 3 times a week to listen to shows. Okay. So I love Stitcher than anything.
So just the sheer amount of content on there, you will not.
And it's constantly growing.
You'll not be disappointed by the variety and the amount of shows.
No.
All right. Cool. So if you want to give it a try, use the URL Stitcher.com/GalacticNetcasts and enter the promo code GalacticNetcasts. And we thank them for their support of the Alien Invasion and Galactic Netcasts. All right, pick time. We need did you guys go woohoo at the same time?
Yes.
Maybe.
Here we go.
Could be our...
That'll be the theme from now on.
Picks music.
So have that at the ready for our picks next time.
All right, sorry.
We need the Wilhelm scream. All right. So my pick is Dark Skies. Are you familiar with the movie Dark Skies?
I remember the previews, but I haven't seen it.
It's pretty good. I saw it on vacation in Canada, Stephanie and I. We're snuggling up on the couch watching this when I was in Ottawa last week. And it's a scary movie. It involves aliens, and it involves a mystery. Well, I probably spoiled it for you, but you would have found out eventually. It does involve aliens, and it's kind of a horror story. It's from the producers of Paranormal Activity, so you kind of know what you're getting into before you even start watching it. Apparently, all the movies that he produces has to take place in a house. But once
I didn't really care for Paranormal Activity.
What's that?
So I didn't really care for Paranormal Activity. Yeah. I was kind of bored.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a family. It's in a house, and there's a family, and strange things start happening. They have two sons, 13-year-old Jesse, and 5 or 6-year-old Sammy. And there's the mom, played by Kerry Russell, of course, Felicity, and Josh Hamilton, who I always recognize, but I can never remember where I know him from. He just has a very familiar look to him.
He's that guy.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, yeah. So they're in the house. The husband is unemployed. He's looking for a job, so there's already stress. There's stress involved. And the mother is kind of floating the whole family with her... she sells houses. What's that called? She's a realtor.
Real estate?
Yeah, real estate. So,
agent.
Slowly but surely, strange things are starting to happen around the house, including a strange remodeling of the kitchen. It's this weird thing with stacking of plates and utensils, and it's kind of like it forms a shape, and then it kind of reflects this light onto the ceiling, and it's this shape of, I don't know, they never really explain that too well. And then there's a bunch of birds that start flying into the house all of a sudden. That's kind of freaky. But we don't really know what's going on. And then people start walking in their sleep. And the husband The wife catches the husband walking in his sleep, but he doesn't wake up. And it's so eventually it's discovered that aliens are visiting this family. And what I didn't like about this movie is they kind of messed with the whole UFO abduction mythos, you know, because traditionally UFO abductions is a regular thing that happens, right, where a person gets taken over their lifetime. Now, with this movie, they explain it as you get visited, but then eventually one of the kids gets taken, like taken for good. And that's totally not the mythos in alien abduction, right? It's
yeah, because typically people are returned.
Yeah.
Some so, maybe not right away, but eventually.
Yeah, so that's what kind of bothered me about this movie. It was a good movie overall, but that's one of the things that was like, you know, if you did your research, if you actually, you know, I'm sure they did. They just decided to go F you. We'll do our own thing. But for people that follow alien abductions, I could see how that would bother a person. One of my favorite actors, though, is in this. What's his name? Hang on one second. You would recognize
Floyd.
Floyd?
Roger?
Roger, sure. Why not?
Bob.
But they bring this expert in. Here, I'm going to...
Liam Neeson. Because he's in everything.
You guys are just throwing out names. You just don't care.
But I actually, like, that was a legit actor. And it's a legit guess because Liam Neeson's in everything.
Yeah. Josh Hamilton, no. Damn it. Now this is starting to bother me. I got to look
at IMDb?
IMDb, yeah. He's another one of those guys.
Oh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about what you said earlier about how this particular director, producer dude, likes to put or set these movies in the house.
Yeah.
And I think the angle that he's going for is the fact that a lot of horror movies take place like in a warehouse or an office building or the woods. And he's trying to make something that's familiar to you actually be creepy.
Okay.
So it'd be creepy if something like invaded your house.
Yeah.
J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons. Yeah. Who's been in a ton of stuff. He's great in this.
J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah. He's great in he's great in this movie. So I recommend it just for his role. He's just one of those crazy like believers that he just... This is a typical plot device in these kind of movies where a family or a person's freaked out about what's going on, and then they start doing research and they discover somebody that knows a lot about this subject, and they usually go to him, and then he explains it all. And this is pretty much what his character did in this movie.
Kind of like the psychic in Poltergeist.
Yeah. Or the smoking gun guys in the X-Files.
The X-Files?
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of.
So there we go. That's my pick this week. It was a good movie. It's available now on DVD, Blu-ray, and digital download. So if you want to get scared a little bit and want your scariness to be alien tinged, there you go. Dark Skies.
Would I get so scared that I would just instantly pee?
Yes.
Okay. Then I might check it out.
Better go before you watch.
I'll just put on some adult diapers. It'll be fine.
Have either of you guys seen World War Z?
Yes.
No, not yet.
We saw it in the theater when I was up there. And, oh, my God, that's a good movie. That's a really
It wasn't
good movie.
As bad as I expected it to be. Because initially with the previews and stuff, I'm like, ah, oh God, this movie's going to be crap. But... I was entertained. I think I might have also been more entertained at the fact that I went with James. And this is typically not a movie that he would want to see, but he wanted to see it. He's not a scary movie kind of guy, and he doesn't like movies with sad endings.
He seems like a very sensitive individual.
So he was sitting there, like, squirming and, like, biting his nails and covering his face. And... Yes.
Those zombies were freaky. Like they're the only zombies that I've seen in movies that actually scared me. That they were just freaky, and they were the.
I wasn't really scared by these zombies. The only thing that really brought the fear factor to me would have been the fact that not only are they running zombies, but they're really big in this pouncing on things
yes.
type of zombies. But that would be about it. Like, I didn't really think they were all that scary.
And they had that weird, like, that jittery movement to them. And that...
Oh, yeah, I kept doing that to James.
Didn't they make...
I would randomly turn...
Didn't they make, like, a different... They made a noise, too, didn't they? That was kind of freaky.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
Apparently, it wasn't creepy enough.
Okay.
I just the only thing that holds me back from seeing that movie is I've read the book.
Yeah, I had a really hard time like bringing myself to actually go see it. But I had to also ignore the fact that it wasn't the book at all. It just happened to share the same name.
Yeah, you just gotta treat it that way. That's all.
So, and overall, I was entertained by it. It wasn't like the greatest zombie movie ever, and there was a huge lack of blood. Considering how many people kept getting pounced and injured and whatnot.
Those visuals, though, were just crazy. Just the mass yeah. amounts of zombies.
I did like the all of the aerial stuff when he was going from location to location.
Yeah.
And seeing Jerusalem and all the different places.
And the airplane scene.
It could be like the geography thing in me.
yeah. I liked the airplane scene a lot and what happened there.
All right. There were a few airplane
No, the final, the when he thought he was good to go and then the thing happened.
You know, the thing with the stuff and
yeah.
that other
the
guy?
The thing with the stuff and yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That
okay. Okay. Yeah.
All
right. Enough of me. Let's move on to Brad. What's your pick?
My pick is actually another movie that is in theaters currently, and it is Pacific Rim. Little rundown from IMDb. As a war between humankind and monstrous sea creatures wages on, a former pilot and a trainee are paired up to drive a seemingly obsolete special weapon in a desperate effort to save the world from the apocalypse. On the verge of defeat, the forces defending mankind have no choice but to turn to the two unlikely heroes, a washed-up former pilot, played Charlie Hunnam, and an untested trainee, who are teamed up to drive a legendary but seemingly obsolete Jaeger from the past. Together they stand as mankind's last hope against the mounting apocalypse. The sea creatures that they're speaking of are actually from an alternate dimension?
So they're not really aliens. They're not really space aliens.
Well, they're on another planet.
Yeah.
But they're think of wormhole.
Okay.
They're traveling via wormhole. It's not like your traditional traveling yeah. in a spacecraft.
Okay.
It is an alien invasion film for all intents and purposes with large robots defending representing the human race. The Jaeger program, which was started soon after one of the first kaiju attacks that destroyed a chunk of the San Diego area, I believe, San Francisco, San Diego. And these Jaegers are built all over the world. So by the time we get to the point in the movie that we're at, they've decided to wind down the Jaeger program, and there's only a handful left. There's a Jaeger from China. There's a Jaeger from Russia. There's the obsolete one that they speak of that was one of the earlier Jaegers that was really beat up in a battle that you actually see at the beginning of the film. It's a very interesting, and I had this discussion before, it's like a different take on the buddy cop film.
Really?
When you think about
it. I can see
that. You know, in your talk about the novelization of the movie, they have the neural bridge, right? And the neural bridge is used because this robot is so huge, it cannot be controlled by one person. So they have to use two people, and this neural bridge links them together in a way that one can control one hemisphere of the sort of the brain of the robot, and the other person controls the other half. So they're kind of dividing the work. But in order for this to work together and not have them, you know, one person move the left leg while the other's, you know, swinging the right arm instead of actually walking, they have to kind of get these people bridged together so that they're in
kind of like a hive mind mentality.
Sort of. And in the process of joining this neural bridge to connect them, they actually share memories that each has. They kind of become one person to a certain degree.
That could get uncomfortable.
What's that?
That could get awkward.
Well, and it kind of does.
Okay.
As you see in the film, in a couple of times, the first incident where the one Jaeger takes a great deal of damage, he is traumatized, and the rookie that you meet later on in the film is traumatized by something that happened in her past. So you bring that baggage with you, and if you're not prepared for the neural bridge that you're going to be sharing these things with each other and knowing the other person as well as you are, and then that's what just kind of reminded me of sort of a buddy cop thing. You always have the grizzled veteran and you have the rookie fresh off of, you know, whatever. And they have to try to work together to make this happen. Heck, I just watched RIPD before the podcast. Same kind of a thing. It's a buddy cop film. So all in all, it's an interesting movie. It's not Shakespearean at all. But if you're looking to be entertained by some stunning videography, filmography, I guess, is the proper thing. I watched it in 2D. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to watch it in 3D and not vomit, so I decided to just watch it in 2D.
It really wasn't bad in 3D as far as the movements and stuff goes. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times with, like, 3D movies, people like to, like, pan really fast and whatnot, but they kind of focus, like, I guess if you remember the movie, they kind of focus on, okay, here's, like, the kaiju coming at you, and then here's the Jaeger fighting. It wasn't, like, just panning back and forth.
Yeah.
Because that would have been really awful.
That would have been, yeah, very awkward.
I would have yacked, so.
So I've got the porn movie name for this, in case you were wondering.
Pacific Rim Job?
Anessa, you stole my thunder.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I said it to Anessa last night.
Yeah, he did. So.
And she's like, that's gross. I'm like, you're right. Yeah, that is really
it
gross.
Is, yeah, it is. So, I'm going to see this weekend. So I'm really excited.
Go in with the expectation that you're going to see something that is kind of a cross between Independence Day, Robot Jocks. You're welcome. Canine Cop.
Canine? Really?
No, I'm just totally throwing that in there, just to throw you off. No, it's Guillermo del Toro. He makes a beautiful movie. Definitely. It doesn't feel like you get enough to really kind of fully engross yourself and to really like all of the characters. You kind of do that with the main ones, and you slowly learn more about one person. And I think a lot of the development energy is put into that particular character.
Is it the bad person? Because I've heard that not the protagonist, but the antagonist, his character is developed more than the main characters.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that's very accurate. The thing is, it's a good story. At least you get that, which is good. It would have been cool to see some other characters get a little bit more background. And you kind of do a little bit with the neural bridge. That's kind of you get flashes of things that happen in each other's lives, so you can kind of visually put together a little bit of their story with some of the characters while they do the neural bridge sequence. So, I mean, that's kind of an interesting way to approach that. But Beautifully done, very interesting in the biology of the alien characters. You find out more about where they come from and why they're coming. And you find out that this isn't the first time they've come, which is also very interesting.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yes.
Okay.
So you need to pay attention to that. It's mentioned briefly, but you're left going, oh, well, there you go. That's really interesting. Hmm. So pay attention. And yeah, it's easily a very enjoyable, fun movie to watch. Just don't expect a whole lot of depth.
Okay. Are you going to see the Wolverine this weekend, Brad?
Probably not this weekend, but probably next week.
Okay. I just wanted to ask. It's not related to anything else. Just curious.
But it is a comic book
movie.
We're
talking about movies.
Yeah. Well, R.I.P.D. is a comic book movie, too, which is one of the reasons why I saw it.
The theater that I went to see World War Z in was amazing. It was the biggest theater I think I've been in. It had an escalator in it.
Holy crap.
Two levels.
Like in the actual theater where you sit?
Well, no. In the lobby. In the lobby.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because there's one in San Antonio, and then I think the Angelica also has an escalator.
Wow, okay. But do they have a full-size model of the Starship Enterprise hanging from the ceiling?
No, but one of them had big industrial fans, but it was because it's the quarry, so they kind of kept the quarry-esque vibe to it.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So it was kind of a neat layout down in San Antonio. The Angelica is less impressive. But it shows really good movies and really independent movies.
Awesome.
I was cyber-stalking you while you were on your trip to Canada, Dave, and I saw the pictures of the Enterprise. It was really awesome.
That's creepy. That's kind of creepy.
You're welcome.
All right, so let's bring up the rear with Anessa.
Bring up the rear, and then I talk about the cooter.
Huh? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, surprise, surprise, as David mentioned earlier, my pick this week is a short story called Cooter. It is written by Linda Hull, and it is basically about this guy named Bedford Crane. And as a kid, he witnesses a cow being abducted. He lives, I guess, like on a farm, and there's a field, and he decides to be creeper teenager and creep over to the neighbor's house because there was a teenage girl that lived there, and he was hoping that one day he would get to see her changing through the window, but she never did. She was changed in like the bathroom where there wasn't a window that he could see through. So, peeping Tom, I guess. But anyway, on his way back from the house, he was crossing across the field, and there were cows, and one of the cows ends up getting abducted, and he pretty much craps himself. And he sees this cow get returned, and it's missing, like, its udders and reproductive organs and stuff. And he, like, totally freaks out, and he is, you know, just really panicking, and he's just wanting to get back home. But he doesn't want to go back home soiled, so he takes off his clothes and buries them in a shallow grave. Well, the guy who owns the land finds his cow, finds the shallow grave, and finds the clothes. And of course, he would leave stuff in his pockets, like a knife with his name on it, so he can figure out who it belongs to. And so they kind of accused Bedford of mutilating this cow. And Bedford's brother, Wallace, ends up being part of the crowd that picks on him growing up and gives him the nickname of Cooter. So he has to grow up with the nickname of Cooter. Fast forward to adult Bedford, and his whole goal in life at this point is to gather proof that there are aliens and show people that he's not nuts and he was telling the truth about what he saw. And so he owns the property of he purchased the property from the guy who used to own that property that had the cow abducted. So he now lives in that house, and he's got this fancy setup with different imaging systems around the perimeters, and he notices one day that there's a couple of beings that don't show up on the thermal camera, but they do on, like, the night vision, or not night vision, I forget.
Infrared?
No. Because it had to do with the body temperature. Like, their body temperature was the same as the night. I think it was just, like, a regular camera. They could see the figures moving. But they couldn't detect, like, any heat signature from them because they were the same temperature as the air. So there was no differentiation. They kind of blended in. And so the story is he's trying to get to these beings and get evidence to prove once and for all that he was telling the truth. And it's, I guess, kind of entertaining. There were a couple of things that made me kind of giggle a little bit while I was reading it. For one, they also have kind of the perspective from the aliens. And the two aliens that are kind of exploring this area apparently only paid attention to, like, media and not, like, actual the history of the planet or anything like that. And so when they come down here and to communicate, they decide to choose Earth names. But the names they choose were, like, Hitler and Bon Jovi.
That reminds me of that show on ABC of the... what's that show called? It's a comedy, and it's all the aliens take famous people's names. Ugh. The neighbors.
Oh, I haven't seen The Neighborhood.
Yeah, The Neighbors.
The Neighbors or whatever it is. Yeah. I haven't seen that. But yeah, that's essentially they end up taking Hitler and Bon Jovi's name and using it because humans can't pronounce their name, so they had to come up with something. But.
I thought you were going to say they're taking names like the Indian telemarketers, you know. Hi, my name is Bob. Bob.
Yeah, no. But yeah, it's maybe like 28 pages or so long. It's not like the greatest short story ever, but I was entertained by it, so.
Plus, I mean, come on, a name like Cooter? You can't pass that up.
Cooterfest!
All right.
Whenever I hear Cooter, I always think of Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Yeah, me too.
Get him, Flash! Yeah. Goo, goo, goo.
No, I think it's in Oklahoma. There's actually a fest called Cooter Fest.
Oh, my God.
And it makes me laugh when I hear it. So.
It's the actual actor that played Cooter from The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Cooter Fest. Yeah, I've heard of that. Mm-hmm. In review, our picks were Cooter, Pacific Rim, and Dark Skies. Quite the variety.
A little bit.
Yeah. All right, before we wrap things up here, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and circle us on Google+. We are all over the freaky place. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. You can go to our website or search for The Alien Invasion on iTunes or listen to us on Stitcher or anywhere else you get your podcasts from. We would love that you would subscribe. Don't just listen and not subscribe. Subscribe, please. I know Brad would give you a hug if you did. A virtual.
Or two.
Yeah, two.
He gives good hugs.
Yeah. A full one and a half hug, I think.
And a half Girl Nelson.
One more thing. Let's repeat the voicemail number again. It's 805-328-3966. I have to always remember to do this because Anessa took the time and copied and pasted the numbers because I always forgot the phone number at the end of the...
And then as soon as I pasted the number, you quit saying it.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm making an effort to repeat it.
I appreciate it, Dave.
805-328-3966. Please call us. Leave a message.
An A for effort, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you very much, sir. All right. So that's going
to
do it.
I don't think this is going to be the way to get people to keep listening to us if you guys are going to sit there and be creepy at each other.
Note to self, stop creepy voice, and you can keep doing the old man voice. That's not nearly as creepy.
I love the old man voice.
Back in my day.
All right, that's going to do it. Final thoughts, people.
My final thought is I almost went with a story for today that from the Huffington Post where somebody grabbed a hunk of coal, and this kind of goes back to the Fermi paradox that you're speaking of before, grabbed a hunk of coal, and this is in sort of the Russian border gentleman by the name of Dmitry, to heat. This story was back in January. Throws in a piece of coal and finds a piece of metal tooth from essentially like a if you had a cog, it would fit into this tooth that would, you know, you'd be able to adjust wherever this piece of metal was by a cog.
Oh, you know what? Paul and I talked, and Anessa talked about this on the Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this was pressed into basically 300 million year old coal.
Crazy.
So essentially what this story is saying without saying it is there was machined metal that was mostly aluminum with just a hint of magnesium in it of a manufactured hunk of metal with the purpose of working with a cog that is 300 million years old. So perhaps we have already been visited, but at the time that the probe stopped by, there was no intelligent life here.
Okay. They said, there's nobody here. Let's move on. And they left their junk behind.
Ooh. I have a final thought.
Okay.
People should join us next week for Time Traveling Robots in Space.
Yes, it's the triumphant return of Triss. I'm looking forward to it. Yes. I've got all kinds of cool ideas and stories tucked away ready for the show. So
sweet.
I wanted to mention one thing, too, before we leave, is we've got our store up and running. You can get pretty cool T-shirts of things that we have talked about on the show. So we've got T-shirts for each of our shows. We've got the Alien Invasion, obviously. We have Time Traveling Robots in Space, Sci-Fi Film School, and Closer Encounters podcasts. And for Alien Invasion, you can get a T-shirt that says, "In Your Pants," which is something that Anessa said.
In your pants.
And we've also got, for Time Traveling Robots in Space, you can get a T-shirt that says... Any final thoughts? I swear to God that I put another one in there, something that Paul always says, be good to each other, or be excellent to each other.
Be excellent to each
other. Yeah, I could have swore I had a T-shirt that said that. Anyways, go to galacticnetcast.com and click on store and buy a T-shirt from us, and the proceeds will help fund the network. We'd appreciate that.
Yay!
All right, that's going to do it. Great being back with you all, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds great. Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.